grief and loss are feelings to share, not bottle up inside. That's why we go to funerals, hold wakes. Mourning can take a lot of different forms, including poetry. In 2011, as Hurricane Irene was barreling toward New York, poet Edward Hirsch's only child, his 22-year-old son Gabriel, disappeared. Hirsch scoured the city looking for him, and after 3 long days, he finally found Gabriel in a hospital, dead. He'd taken a club drug at a party, had a violent reaction, and died of a seizure. Now, this is every parent's worst nightmare. But because Hirsch is a poet, he channeled some of his overwhelming grief into a book-length poem called simply Gabriel. Steve Paulson asked him to read some of it.
The funeral director opened the coffin, and there he was alone from the waist up. I peered down into his face, and for a moment I was taken aback, because it was not Gabriel. It was just some poor kid whose face looked like a room that had been vacated. But then I looked more intently at his heavy eyelids and fine features. He had always been a restive sleeper. Now he was weirdly still. My reckless boy.
Wow, Edward, that is a pretty brutal beginning to your poem. In fact, you bookend the poem with 2 scenes from your son's funeral. Why was that important to take us there to witness that scene?
First of all, I didn't want it to be a mystery story. I didn't want to be coy about what happened. I wanted to set out from the beginning that it was about the death of my son. And I was writing an elegy, but I wanted to break down the decorum of the elegy, which is usually somewhat polite and offers certain kinds of consolations. But the reality for me was much more devastating, and I wanted to try and catch that devastation right at the beginning, to begin on that note, so that whoever was reading this would know what's at stake.
Well, I would think the very decision to write this book, to tell Gabriel's story, must have been awfully hard for you for all kinds of reasons. I mean, for one thing, it meant that you had to enter into your pain, into your grief. What made you want to go ahead and write this poem?
I felt that a tsunami had hit me personally and that I needed to try to stand up. And I've spent my life in poetry, and I'm not a religious person. And after I'd been mourning for some time, I was left alone with my grief. And I really didn't know quite what to do with myself. And I thought that if I could call on my resources as a poet, then it would give me something to do with my grief. It would be something active. And I felt I could reach out to other people.
Well, you also mentioned that you are working within that old tradition of poetry that deals specifically with death. I mean, the elegy, going back centuries, which you have defined elsewhere as a poem of mortal loss and consolation. How did you work with this particular literary tradition?
Well, first of all, the elegy, the lamentation, a form of keening, has always been part of poetry. There's never been a poetry without it. I think that it's extremely hard for us to come to terms with our mortality, the fact that we'll die and the people we love die, and that one of the functions or purposes of poetry is to try to give us some ways to feel and think about that. And that's always been part of my thinking about poetry.
Well, in fact, you've said elsewhere that the heart of poetry is the idea of death. I mean, you're not just talking about elegies, you're talking about poetry in general.
That's right. I think that the premise of poetry is we're trying to save something that is ephemeral, that's passing, and we want to save it that will be lasting. And there's something scandalous. It's an ordinary scandal, but it is a scandal. There's something shocking in the fact that everything passes away. And poetry is a way to try and enact something, to try and keep the experience, to try and render something so that it doesn't just pass away, to say, we were here, we lived. And poetry is a particularly powerful way of dramatizing the experience so that you don't know, just someone doesn't tell you what it was like, but they try to show you how it felt like to be here. And that's the work of poetry.
So to go back to that definition that you have written of the elegy, which is a poem of mortal loss and consolation, did you find consolation writing this particular elegy to your son?
Yes. While I was dwelling in it, it was a kind of consolation and comfort for me because I felt I was with Gabriel. But afterwards, I still didn't have Gabriel. I had only my poem.
We should talk some about Gabriel, about what kind of person he was. How would you describe him, both as he was growing up and also the young man he became?
I would say that Gabriel was wild, impetuous, extremely impulsive, very funny. I think the success of Gabriel's life was that he took his various neurological disorders and problems and turned them into a kind of personality.
And he had been diagnosed with all kinds of things, attention deficit disorder, Tourette's syndrome, maybe bipolar disorder. I mean, there, a lot of stuff that he was living with.
There's a whole menu of things. At one point in the poem, I list all the diagnoses that he was given. And finally, they ended on pervasive development disorder not otherwise specified, and which I know is a clinical diagnosis, but I didn't think told you very much. But he took these various compulsions and disabilities that he had, and he used them and incorporated them into his personality. And he became quite a charming, charismatic young guy. And I always thought that was the success of his personality.
Well, you have a great passage that gets at this irrepressible and impetuous nature. Could you read it for us?
My pleasure. I'm now talking about Gabriel in his late teens, early 20s, when he was just so impulsive and moving around all the time. It was impossible to keep track of him at all hours. He spent whatever money he had, whenever he had it, spendthrift gambler. I could never stay mad at him for long. He just shrugged his shoulders and laughed helplessly. I couldn't help it. I had to, Dad. He wasn't made for a world of checkbooks and savings accounts, stockbrokers, investment bankers. Charlie called him a clown of God. He wasn't a monster of subtlety like the two of us. He would try anything once. He hazarded. He was sometimes scared. He was never scared enough of scoundrels and drug dealers. He thought teachers and supervisors and psychiatrists were the enemy. Policemen riled him. He had rights, a lover, a posse of friends. No one could restrain him. King of the sudden impulse, lord of the torrent, emperor of the impetuous.
That is wonderful.
It's funny.
Yeah. What was the hardest part about writing this poem?
Well, the hardest part wasn't with writing the poem. The hardest part was that you're trying to face a loss that is unendurable to you. And some things in life feel unendurable, and yet they have to be endured. They're unbearable, and yet they have to be borne. And so every day that I was working on this poem, I was trying to endure something that felt unendurable to me. And that's the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah. Your poem builds in its sorrow, its grief. And there are references to your own Jewish background, though my understanding is that you are not an observant Jew in any sense. But there is a Jewish tradition of dealing very explicitly with mourning by saying Kaddish. And I'm wondering if that had any influence on either you or on the writing of this poem.
Both. I think Kaddish is a very... It's a wonderful tradition in which someone says Kaddish every day for a year, for 11 months, after someone has died. I'm Jewish, but I have not been able to find comfort in the traditional rituals of the religion. But I'm aware of them, and I understand their power and their authority and why they work. And I think all of religion is set up in a way to bring people into a community at moments where they're find the greatest desolation. And I honor that, but I'm more secular-minded myself.
Well, by the end of your poem, I had the sense that you were practically wailing and certainly raging against the God you don't believe in.
That's right. I don't believe in God, but I can't give up the idea of him either. You know, I want someone to complain to. There ought to be a higher force to complain to. And I'm enraged. I'm in a kind of fury. And I'm also, you know, a lot of people are offering you, when someone has died, they offer you the consolations of it's all for a purpose and there's a reason behind it. And people offer you a lot of religious consolations. And I found them, for me, unacceptable. And so my poem rages against the idea, it rages against the deity. It's a kind of furious outcry against God.
Oh, you have a passage right near the end of your poem that gets at that. Could you read that?
Close the prayer book. I will not pretend that God brings peace upon us and upon all Israel. I don't want to hear anyone scolding me from her wheelchair because I'm crying too hard. I'm not worried about a heart attack. Nothingness, you've already broken my heart. I will not forgive you, son of emptiness, sky of blank clouds. I will not forgive you, indifferent God, until you give me back my son.
Edward Hirsch, reading from his book-length poem, his elegy for his son. It's called Gabriel. Steve Paulson talked with him.